Okay, folks, before we start today's show, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Texas Coin. Right now, that Texas coin is sitting right at $3.16, and that's right now on September 10th, 2025. They're hashing right there in the great state of Texas, right out about 400 gigahertz. And I tell you, right now, they have already signed up 23,793 miners. And you'll recall, I signed up about a month ago. There was only 12,000, so it's practically doubled. They're signing up about 350 a day to mine that Texas coin. Hey, if you want to get in on this and learn more about it, just shoot an email to texitmines@gmail.com. That's TEXITMINES@gmail.com. And go ahead and shoot that. Put the word palm in there somewhere, like in the subject line, P-A-L-M, like a palm tree, to get that discount. And we hope you enjoy today's show.
Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the Mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Palm and Pine Podcast. Today we are continuing with part two of our interview with Alan Howarth. So enjoy the show.
If we may go back to the 440, the 440, 432 A debate, you know, in conspiracy theory circles, a lot of people say it was for sinister reasons that they moved it to 440. And that we should be at 432A. What are your views on that?
Sinister, maybe. I'm going to take a little more neutral and say that it became an engineering thing. They didn't think it meant anything. So here you are, you know, trying to hit standard frequencies. I mean, there was historical use of 440. There's a 444, which is also part of this, that's the standard tuning in Europe. The symphony's already tuned to that, so it's not that hard to find if you go looking for it. I did a research on the tuning fork. Oh, here's another. All right, so in the history of the tuning fork, the first music tuning fork was invented in the year 1711. The guy was named John Shore. He was the royal cornetist in the royal court. And he came there, boop, and he chose a frequency of 423 and a half. Why? Because it sounded right to him. Well, the part I didn't tell you about is besides the pi frequency of A432, there's a family of pi frequencies that was originally in Bateman's research that he shared with me. And it was nine variations of the frequencies, and the range was A421 to 427. So over this range of frequencies, and the middle was 424. So, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The tuning fork of this first tuning fork was in that frequency range. So intuitively, the guy in 1711 with no computers picked the thing that sounded right to him. Did a little more research, and the tuning fork for Mozart was 421. The tuning fork for Brahms was 422. And each composer had a tuning fork that sounded right to him. Well, I would show these frequencies at these sound healing conferences. I did one in San Francisco and showed this variations of frequencies. And a couple of weeks later, I get a call from Dr. Alan Sheets at NASA. And he goes, "Alan, I heard about your frequencies. We need to talk." Well, I meet with Dr. Sheets. He has an organization called New Equations. And from the Egyptian writings in a thing called The Temple of Man, a very famous book, the Egyptians talk about there's nine soul types, nine resonances. We all function in nine versions. And I had nine variations of pi, not phi, but nine variations of pi, which is energy. So the phi frequencies is physical. Our bodies are here. If I look at my finger and I call this part one, the next bone is 1.618 times longer. The next part, 1.618 going again. If I do this, there's a little snail shell right in my hand. The Fibonacci stuff is in the design of us physically. That's why the 432. That's why when we do sound healing for the bones and the muscles and the joints, that's the basis. But this other plugin, and I'm pretty much at the source of this. This is not, I haven't written the book yet, is the pi frequencies, which is the energy. All right. And so Sheets comes forward and he says, well, you know, let's look. And I gave him the frequencies and we retuned it. And he came back and he said, yeah, it works. It turns out it's the resonance of the chakras. So the crown chakra is a A427, 26, 25, 24 is the heart chakra. 23, 22, 21 is the root chakra. So as an artist, if I want to write love songs, I want to tune to the heart. If we want to have a religious experience, I could tune to the crown. It's a subtle difference, but it is there. And we're now talking about stuff that's in molecules and probably even down to the atomic level with some very fine tuning. But this is another range of the frequencies in energy. So it makes sense that a whale would be in 432 because he's physical, all right? Whereas the humans can also now, as scientists, look at this stuff in energy. And so there's something all to be said that this could be integrated into pretty much everything. I mean, should computer chips be clocked at something that's in tune with this stuff? Would it work better? Would my printing press be better if it was printing at a certain frequency? I mean, this has not been integrated into what we do. So that's a short version of a long story. So,
right.
Yeah. So anyway, A432 is the physical, and A424, which is the heart chakra with this range, is the energetic chakra stuff. And the soul type uh-huh. is that each of us have a resonance. It turns out I'm a heart chakra guy. I mean, the one that sounded right to me was the one that was for my chest. And then here's this tuning fork from 7011 on the same note. How can that be? It has to be because it's true. Because I didn't know this guy, and then, you know, I wasn't there. But meanwhile, we look at it 300 years later, and it's still what comes up. And these frequencies are in the acoustics of the Great Pyramid. Holy shit. Yeah.
Well, how do you think they use the pyramid as a resonator of some sort for some religious purposes or religious activity? Or
yeah, so my own experience, obviously, I went there and did the stuff. I was using the frequencies to do the measurements. But at the time, I had these early digital cameras, and I was taking all these flash pictures with the little digital cameras, and I was getting all these pictures of orbs. I don't know if you've seen this, where there's like, it seems like there's balls of light that are in the photography. Well, that was because those first cameras, the flash and the shutter were simultaneous. And so it would catch frequencies that normally we don't see with our eye. They've since adjusted. Your iPhone does not do the flash and the shutter at the same time. The flash goes and it waits an interval. So all that stuff goes away and you see the picture you want to see. But we were getting all these energy balls with the photography. And so I lay down in the sarcophagus. So there's this, I'll say, you know, stone tub, coffin, whatever you want to think. I lay down. Two things that happen. I lay down the thing. It's completely polished. Like, there's no way somebody did this with chisels. This is a machine. And the corners had perfect radiuses. It wasn't roughed out. It was looked modern. And this thing has been there for a way long time. So whoever did this was functioning from a different tool set, literally. So I lay down and I go, this is a fucking bathtub. What they did is they filled it with salt water. You floated in here as part of the priesthood. You floated in the energy of the pyramid and you went out. You were what people do drugs for today. This is a natural inducer of extrasensory perception. And you would graduate in this spot. Well, I think that's one of the functions of that they did in afterwards is if you were going to be graduating, you did the thing, you then saw what you were taught to see because that was your knowledge base, however you understand it, and beyond. And then you were in. You believed and you became a believer. In addition, here's this thing that's coupled. It's 13 acres at its base. the bottom is, you know, the touching the planet, and it's perfectly level. Come on. 13 acres of, well, you try to do a field with 13 acres and make it all flat. Whoever did this was way beyond even what we can do today. We'll accept that. It's still there. So when I measured it, back to the measurements, besides the acoustic stuff, I look at these low frequencies, and it reveals that the pyramid is coupled to the planet. And the Earth frequencies, the Schumann resonance and the stuff that's happening below sound, is all amplified by this pyramid. And I don't know if you've seen it. At this point, there's some speculation that below the pyramids is another whole big resonator.
Right.
Column, which, again, back to suppressing, they're not going to let it all flow out. But there's a pretty good chance this is we're looking at the top of this giant thing that's put there that is a stabilizer. I believe it's a stabilizer, and amplifies the Earth force for us.
To
rise above, you know, go to the forest, go to the waterfall, and there's energy. Have that all be concentrated and reamplified for us as a culture to build our little thing out. And it's interesting that location where the pyramid is actually the center of the original landmass of the planet. If you were to look at, you know, before everything broke into continents and it said that there was all land in one spot, that's the middle. That's the center point. It's the heart of the Earth. So, wow. I mean, back to this idea of folks that were not from Earth, definitely, you know.
Wow.
There was stuff going on that was beyond our comprehension even at this point.
Now, you mentioned Mozart, and I'm a great fan of Baroque and classical music. And mm-hmm. I say those guys, they had in their ears natural sounds, maybe a horse galloping. But things really changed in the Romantic period in the mid-19th century. To me, the music gets more harsh, more abstract, and you see the Industrial Age start. And they had new sounds to hear. Mm-hmm. And that goes into the great downfall, the 20th century, more modern music. You hear car horns in the composer's music by the time you get to the early 20th century. Would you agree with that the change in sounds of the Industrial Age really changed music? And how could we get music back to more of a natural reference?
Okay, good question. Let's look at music and where does it come from? Well, it came from the voice. Originally, the one of the greatest instruments is our own voices. And then it's the world around us. So if we were beating on rocks or hitting sticks together, that was the first instruments. And then we began making more sophisticated tools. In the Renaissance, there was an information peak. And the sacred geometry and all the knowledge and working for the church brought this priesthood and the science guys still together. They weren't split up. So that's why these great cathedrals have all this architecture that still reflects this knowledge base. It's all built in there. And if you look at a violin, at the top of the violin, there's this little coil at the top. Well, that's the same Fibonacci curve. It's built into the thing. They understood this. They knew this stuff intuitively. No computers, no books to define it. You know, so these great composers constructed their music and what sounded right to them. In fact, I had a meeting with this guy, Michael Tilson Thomas. He's the conductor for the Miami Symphony and also for San Francisco. And I had the discussion, you know, I said, you know, probably to really appreciate Mozart, the orchestra should tune to Mozart's tuning fork. And we should hear the music in the exact tuning of the composer, because as it was intended. And he said, "Ashton, you're on to something now, and I think we should look into this idea of re-performing these music compositions, one for the listener, but also for the musicians. They would have a different experience with the frequencies. And this part, I'm totally in on this stuff. I mean." If I ask you to sing a note right now and you're not a trained musician and you just go, there's a good chance This is your natural note.
La.
Whatever that is, that's you.
Yeah.
Right? And if we measure that, it's not going to be on A440. It's going to be either in this pi or phi frequency envelope. And so shouldn't all music be made that way? Wouldn't it be better? And now with the computers and the tools and even the craziness with this AI stuff, it's all still repeating the original. It comes from the foundation. So what you're saying, is there a go back to, did we lose something? Or even as artists, when I make music, I put sound effects in my music. So yeah, I've crossed that boundary. All sound is music to me. The bird songs, the whale songs, the violin, the electric guitar, everything I can get out of a computer, it's all just a palette of sound creation. In fact, I call myself a sonic composer. I build from sound. I don't build just from music. And sort of that composer sound designer thing, the little unique slot that I fell into, not never planned it, but it's just wound up, I wound up because it sounded right to me. It's where I wanted to go. And I found from career out of doing that. As like one of the first guys to play with this stuff. Obviously, all the everybody does it now, but I was doing this in the 80s and the 90s, trying to figure it out. And I love that. I love pioneering. I've been the first kid in the block to get to play with something.
Wow. Hey, so Al, let me lay this on you and get your thoughts on this. So, you know, I'm a wildlife biologist. I love to be outdoors. That's my church, right? That's where I heal.
Absolutely.
And one thing I've learned, I've done some long distance backpacking. So, you know, you're out in the outdoors, you're far away from civilization, right?
Yeah.
You may walk for days from the parking lot. So you're 60, 50, 70 miles in the backcountry. And something that I've noticed, and it's just me personally, is, and I don't know the exact length of time, but I would say about three days, no phone, disconnected, totally immersed in the outdoors, not going back to a hotel room that night. You're sleeping on the ground. Something changes like deep inside me as a person. And the longer I'm out there, the more comfortable I am, the better I feel. I don't really worry about what time it is. The things I worry about, like I'm worried about, okay, I got to do this tomorrow. I got to do this. I got to pay this bill. All of that slowly falls away. And that happens incrementally, but then all of a sudden you're free and I feel closer to God than any other time I'm on earth. Now, for the layman, if we want to get close to God, explain that. What can we do with no special equipment? Get in touch with that rhythm of nature. And is that, am I onto something there? Is that something you think that is connected with sound when I'm out there?
Oh, absolutely. Everything you just said sounds completely logical to me. Myself included, I'm on the phone. I can't turn this thing off. I've got messages. I've got communications coming in, all this electronics. It completely breaks with what would be a natural state of mind, the distraction, the information, et cetera, et cetera. And 3 days with no phone out in the wilderness with just a chance to, that's how it was thousands of years ago, right? There was no clock. I mean, they started keeping track of the stars and knowing what, cycles of life, but they didn't care about what was 5 minutes from now. They were just, that didn't matter anymore. So it makes total sense. And then experiencing this 3-day journey and just being immersed in nature via the light and the sound and the air and the vibrations of the planet, because now you've turned all that other stuff off. This is back to the idea of meditation. Can anybody even break away for a half hour today and turn all that stuff off? Even take a little sip of that on a daily basis versus the full immersion experience. It's all in the right idea. It's all reconnecting to our source. I saw the pyramid having mathematics that I believe is the math of the source, of the architects, the designers of us, is reflected in us being here, in being these three-dimensional meat bodies with a spirit experiencing through this three-dimensional interface we call our bodies and experiencing life. It's on a grand scale. And so modern day stuff just distracts from that.
Right.
Whereas you shut down and you actually got in touch, and it'd be interesting. Do you write anything down? Do you try to record what goes on in those states of mind? Or are you just experiencing them? Or
I just get lost in it and enjoy it.
It's okay.
Try to share it, you know, in mm-hmm. moments like this. But I think it's something all of us can naturally do.
Yeah, I agree. It's how it was before civilization and culture started to amass into this current experience.
Yeah.
And back to what we talked about, there were times before this time when everything we're doing right now already happened once, and it got erased. It got reset. And that's back to the big designer, who runs our galaxy? There has to be a management, right? It just doesn't seem, it's not random.
No.
It's what was the joke? It's like taking a truckload of lumber and dumping it from 500 feet and expecting it to house be at the bottom of the thing. No, it's a designed and carefully constructed, and everything is adjusted. And, I get a little philosophical. Let's go all the way back to the mind that made all this. Does this exist? Well, if you already were everything and you knew everything and there was no time, well, I would create something where there was time. And I would kind of make this to see what happens. Like, if I don't interfere with this and I just kind of start the thing rolling down the hill, where's it going to go? And that's interesting, the randomity, what we come up with. And Dr. Hertog, remember I mentioned Dr. Hertog was the sponsor of the expeditions to the Yucatan and to the pyramid. He's a double PhD, so you had to go through a college. You couldn't just go as a tourist, right? So he had all the alignments. in his book called The Keys of Enoch, he had this experience in 1972 where he prayed for the meaning of his life. And I'll use the word spirit because I don't want to get too far. The essence of Enoch showed up and said, "You want to know? Let's go, buddy." And took him on this spiritual journey, which went out through our solar system, out through our galaxy, up to the Father Galaxy, to the Creator's Senate, where all this stuff goes on, and they were creator God agents of multipliers, reflections of creation, which now make planets and solar systems. And it's an ongoing infinite project. But the book's called The Keys of Enoch. It's worth reading.
Definitely get that.
Yeah, I mean, just for a summary, Enoch was the seventh son of Adam, and he was the father of Noah.
Okay.
So he was definitely connected, and he was the first ascended being. So he was somebody who didn't die in traditional way. He was taken up. So he was an agent between mankind and the higher group.
Wow.
And he's still around.
Wow. Well, hey, this is awesome, Al. We could talk and really listen to you all day, and we love this. We're so grateful that you joined us today on the podcast. We're so grateful for the grand architect that has this infinite design. And, you know, the birds sing. They don't sing because they're happy. They sing because that's what they are meant to do. you do what you're meant to do because that's what you're meant to do. And we're so grateful for it. We're so grateful to learn from you and to get a little insight. And we're going to listen a little closer. We're going to go on some long walks in the woods today, and we're going to try to tune in to that frequency of God. And we're so thankful for you being with us today.
Oh, I'm glad to share this. I live it every day. You know, I wake up and try to navigate through life and pay my bills and do whatever I'm going to do. And I have to put some attention to this. So you gave me a chance to focus on this for this morning. Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Thank you, Al Horwath. We really appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Thanks for listening, and keep it Florida.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.